Good afternoon, and welcome to the study for April 11th, 2024 of the Common Era. I'm Ward Green with you again today for the study in the Crucible article, this time part 2, chapter 10, paragraph 3. But before we begin, first of all, the time I said was, I'm not sure if I said the time, but it's 18:33 hours Eastern Daylight Time. And Zechariah chapter 1, we're beginning that today, but then I realized a day or so ago, when we finish Malachi, which is the book after Zechariah, so we have two more books to finish the Protestant Old Testament, we will still, though, have Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, because we haven't done those books yet. They're the books that are just preceding the book of Job, which we did do already, and which is available in videos that were already posted, some quite a while ago. I'm not sure how easy they are to find in the grand list of all the different videos. If you search the page of the JW, the white on blue JW, at the top of Will of Jehovah, then that page that comes up has all the files that are on online in the JW Box directory. And in those files, you should be able to find the book of Job by searching for the text of that name in the file name. If it's actually, I'm trying to remember if the full file name appears. I think it should, anyway. If it does, then you can search that full file name and you should be able to find all the references to the book of Job there. But I'll be looking into that myself. But Zechariah chapter 1 is what we're going to be starting today. And we've got the books of, as I said, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther still to come after Malachi as well. Clark writes about Zechariah that he was the 11th of the 12 minor prophets and that he prophesied at the same time as Haggai, about 2 months after Haggai had begun to prophesy, and he gives him a date of 520 BCE, which is about what we would say the second year of Darius would be, about 521 or 520 BCE, very close to what we would say was his date. And it says some people think he was born at Jerusalem, others think he was born at Babylon, and also some say he was a priest, others say he was not a priest, and some say he was the immediate son of Iddo, and others believe that he was the grandson of Iddo, as he says in Zechariah 1, verse 1, when he identifies himself as Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo the prophet. And in fact, in Matthew, as well as in Luke, there's a reference to a prophet called Zechariah, the son of Berechiah. Well, he was slaughtered, though, by... That's a different Zechariah. Right. That's a different Zechariah because, yeah, he's... That Zechariah was slaughtered by one of the kings of Judah, and there were no kings of Judah at this time when Zechariah prophesied. Their kingship ended in 587, which was decades before 520 BCE. So, yeah, there's something to learn about those things. But when we start our study today, which is now, we will do the crucible first, and then we'll come back and do the readings. Hopefully, they're not too long. They're not too long today. What do we have? We've got Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 33 also is the other one that we're intending. Here it is here. The reign of Manasseh and his son Amon are talked about in that chapter. So hopefully we'll get to that soon. But in the book Oked Onkh Quest, from the Crucible of Credible Creed, Part 2, Chapter 10, Paragraph 3, Leah D., that's the name of the author of this book, Oked Onkh Quest, the author Liadi asserts that Moses was a co-ruler of Egypt called Pharaoh Chebron and ruled at the time of Pharaoh Amos I of Egypt. And we can verify that by looking at Meniso. We see Amosis, who's Amos. His reign was 25 years, as even today we believe. Meniso lived a couple hundred years before the Common Era. So his records here are ancient, but they're still very much believed by most scholars today. Most of his kings' reigns that he lists are believed and used very much by the modern scholars. But Hebron is sort of believed to be non-chronologically sequential. He's sort of believed to be co-ruling at the same time as one of the others, such as Amos. He's not believed, anyway, to be chronologically significant by being sequential. So, just for reference, though. So that's why it's interesting when this author, Liadi, having trouble finding it, here it is, when she mentions Hebron and she says Moses was a co-ruler, then that's interesting. And Hebron ruled 13 years and is mentioned on the ancient king lists, as we just saw, after Amos I. Whereas King David reigned at the time of the 21st dynasty of Egypt. This was the 18th, by the way. That's the 18th dynasty of Egypt, where Amos and Hebron ruled. David ruled at the same time of the 21st dynasty, which is the time of Susen and Susen II, and Saimon, who's called Sennacherib. That's the time of King David, the 21st dynasty of Egypt. But the 18th dynasty was the time of Moses, apparently. I keep on forgetting. There, we're in a different tab there. Okay, so Susen the First's reign was when David reigned, and in fact, even in Simon's reign as well. And Moses, on the other hand, walked 484 years earlier than that and is surely more difficult to date because he was earlier. This is simply, because all dates are reckoned backwards and any uncertainty to recenter dates propagates backward. That's why it's more difficult to date the ancient dates. The dating of King David has assisted the dating of Moses, logically, because we date from more recent dates on back. As mentioned earlier regarding the quote-unquote vagabonds of Pharaoh Hatshepsut's inscription, she had an inscription, Pharaoh Hatshepsut did, about these vagabonds of the north. And does not the biblical meeting of Moses with his brother Aaron in the wilderness match well? Surely they must have looked as they met in the wilderness, two lone shepherds, rather like vagabonds. Also, the departure of Israel as a nation out of Egypt as a vast mixed company, bringing with them many goods as well as livestock. Would it not also meet the same description? This mixed company with all the livestock, wouldn't they look like a bunch of vagabonds? Hatshepsut may have been too young to know Moses before he left Egypt for the land of Midian in 1533 BCE. She was married to the pharaoh Thutmose II, who reigned from 1490 BCE, as we've talked about already. But that's later in time, so she might not have been born till even after 1533. But we know she ruled for quite a while, until about 1468. About 22 years from 1490 is when she ruled. And she's also on Meniso's list, if we look at that. See, in the 18th dynasty, if we go back there, she's got 21 years, so that's Amerses or Ameses. Here she is, yeah, 21 or 22 years. in Miniso. She's the fourth pharaoh on the list of the 18th dynasty of Miniso. On two of the columns, and she doesn't appear in on the list of Eusebius there, but he's on the rightmost column. I keep forgetting. I'm in the same browser. I have to keep going back to the other tab. There we are. So she's reputed to have died at the age of 50 years. Okay, so if that's true, yeah. Then she, if she died in 1468, add 50, that's about 1518 or so that she might have been born. So she was born after Moses left for the land of Midian. But he didn't take part in the Exodus until he came back in 1493, at which point she would have been alive. But in 1469 BCE, she died in the crucible of our reason. However, hardly his earlier adoption, Moses, that is, by Egypt's royal family might escape her. In other words, it might have been difficult for her to not know that that Moses had been adopted by the Pharaoh's family in the time of Pharaoh Apophis, as we date the birth of Moses. Now, she was ruling during the time of Thutmose, and he was the king of the south, not the north, so it's possible she might have not known who Moses was. But so it may have been that the term vagabond, in quotes, vagabond, was cautious on her part, that is. In other words, she may have known full well who he was, and she might have been using that term cautiously so as not to identify Moses. I think that's what I meant by that. Whether this Moses had ever been Pharaoh was secondary to, if not obliterated by, his apparent betrayal of his family of Egyptian nationality. That's the other thing. He had betrayed his family, his adoptive family, in order to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. He had to relinquish his position as being a part of Pharaoh's house and become part of his brothers, the Israelites, as a group, so that he could lead them out of Egypt. That's not an often mentioned thing. Apparently, he betrayed his Egyptian family. But his leadership of Israel was into the wilderness and out of their Egyptian bondage of 400 years. These are indeed things over which to ponder and judge. We've talked about the 400 years, too, that Israel spent in Egypt already. As the crucible is a quote-unquote car or vehicle, by being also, quote, key reason, unquote, it is also in reverse the letters. If you reverse KR, you get RK, or in quotes, ARK, the arc. So like a car, but it's the arc, right? It's some kind of carriage, thing that carries things. Like the ark carried the tablets, and Noah's ark carried the animals and Noah's family. And correct chronology, in quotes, is that not true? Could it not be a saving caress? The CR in caress, for example, CRR, as in correct and as in chronology, there's also CR. For are not Jehovah's graces his caresses of his people? So does the name Hebron or Chebron evoke the key within the reason? It's not a question. So does the name Hebron evoke the key within the reason? Hebron actually has a C and an R too. C-H-E equates to K, B to within, because the letter B in Hebrew is the preposition, in or within, and R equates to the word light in the Hebrew language. So we have the key within the reason, light being the reason, something that we understand by means of having had light, like a light bulb in the brain, as it's illustrated commonly. Vagabond may be rendered, quote, and thoughts within raw idea, because the V is the word and, the G is the word for thoughts, the B is the in, the N is letter nu in Hebrew, which is a raw, or the abyss, you know, something raw, and I'm trying to think what else it is, nu, within raw idea, why that's raw, but it's something like the abyss. I'm trying to think what it is in Hebrew. In Egyptian, it's the abyss. I'm trying to think what it is in Hebrew. But evidently, it means raw, because that's why I've translated it that way. And the letter D means idea in Hebrew. This is from Joe Lanyadu, these translations. So the vagabond means thoughts within raw idea. It does not appear far-fetched to believe that Moses wrote what is known today as the Rhind Papyrus, the front side of which is a copy of the much earlier mathematical document. Well, let's come back, because we've got to start reading. We'll come back to this tomorrow. It's fascinating. All of this study, is it not, about Egypt and the Israelites? But 2 Chronicles 33 now. 12 years old was Manasseh when he began to reign, and for 55 years he reigned in Jerusalem, and he proceeded to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes, according to the detestable things of the nations that Jehovah had driven out from before the sons of Israel. So he built again the high places that Hezekiah his father had pulled down, and set up altars to the Baals, and made sacred poles, and he began to bow down to all the army of the heavens and serve them. And he built altars in the house of Yahweh, respecting which Yahweh had said, "In Jerusalem my name will prove to be to time indefinite." And he went on to build altars to all the army of the heavens in two courtyards of the house of Yahweh. Bad things he was doing. Pulled down the high places that... Or he built again. He didn't pull them down. He built again the high places, the bad ones, that Hezekiah had pulled down. Verse 3. And he set up altars to the Baals, all these things that Jehovah didn't approve of. And he himself made his own sons pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. Verse 6. And practiced magic, and used divination, and practiced sorcery, and made spiritistic mediums and professional foretellers of events. He did on a grand scale what was bad in the eyes of Jehovah to offend him. Furthermore, he put the carved image that he had made in the house of the true God, respecting which God had said to David and to Solomon his son, "In this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, I shall put my name to time indefinite." That was in the house of the true God, the temple. He put the carved image that he had made, which is not acceptable to Jehovah at all. And in verse 8, Jehovah had also said to David and to Solomon his son, "And I shall not remove the foot of Israel again from off the ground that I assigned to their forefathers, provided only that they take care to do all that I've commanded them concerning all the law and the regulations and the judicial decisions by the hand of Moses," end quote. And Manasseh kept seducing Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to do worse than the nations that Jehovah had annihilated from before the sons of Israel. Manasseh was worse than these nations that Jehovah had annihilated. And Jehovah kept speaking to Manasseh and his people, but they paid no attention. Finally, Jehovah brought against them the chiefs of the army that belonged to the king of Assyria. And so they captured Manasseh in the hollows and bound him with two fetters of copper and took him to Babylon. And as soon as it caused him distress, he softened the face of Yahweh, his God, and kept humbling himself greatly because of the God of his forefathers. And he kept praying to him so that he let himself be entreated by him. And he heard his request for favor and restored him to Jerusalem, to his kingship. And Manasseh came to know that Yahweh is the true God. So, once he got in trouble, was taken away to Babylon, and he was in distress, then Manasseh sought for Jehovah's help, and he was forgiven. But he also came to know that Yahweh is the true God. And after this, he built an outer wall for the city of David to the west of Gihon in the Torrent Valley and as far as the Fish Gate. And I want to mention, too, I looked up the radiocarbon dating of Hezekiah's tunnel. It's fascinating, the article I found, but there's no accurate radiocarbon between the year 800 BCE and 400 BCE. So it's approximate, but they date 700 as the date, radiocarbon date, that is, of Hezekiah's tunnel, which is also called the Siloam Tunnel in Jerusalem. It's this very lengthy tunnel underground that is apparently proof of our dating of Hezekiah in year 1725 BCE, approximate date of the tunnel being 700 BCE. Very satisfactory confirmation of our chronology. And so we come on to as far as the Fish Gate, the outer wall went, and he ran it around to Ophel and proceeded to make it very high. This is Manasseh, the king of Judah. Further, he put chiefs of the military force in all the fortified cities in Judah, and he proceeded to remove the foreign gods and the idol image from the house of Jehovah and all the altars that he had built in the mountain of the house of Jehovah and in Jerusalem, and then had them thrown outside the city. Moreover, he prepared the altar of Yahweh and began to sacrifice upon it communion sacrifices and thanksgiving sacrifices, and went on to say to Judah to serve Jehovah, the God of Israel. Nevertheless, the people were still sacrificing upon the high places, only it was to Jehovah their God. As for the rest of the affairs of Manasseh and his prayer to his God and the words of the visionaries that kept speaking to him in the name of Jehovah, the God of Israel, there they are among the affairs of the kings of Israel. As for his prayer and how his entreaty was granted him, and all his sin and his unfaithfulness, and the locations in which he built high places and set up the sacred poles and the graven images before he humbled himself, there they are written among the words of his visionaries. I've just eaten some good fresh pineapple, and it's tickling my throat a little bit. Finally, Manasseh lay down with his forefathers, and they buried him at his house. And Amon, his son, began to reign in place of him. I think I'll be all right. 22 years old was Amon when he began to reign, and for 2 years he reigned in Jerusalem. And he proceeded to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes, just as Manasseh, his father, had done. And to all the graven images that Manasseh, his father, had made, Amon sacrificed, and he continued serving them, and he did not humble himself because of Yahweh, the same as Manasseh, his father, humbled himself, for Amon was one that made guiltiness increase. Finally, his servants conspired against him and put him to death in his own house, but the people of the land struck down all the conspirators against King Amon, and the people of the land then made Josiah, his son, king in place of him. This we finally arrived at, the well-known King Josiah, whose reign began in 639 BCE in our chronology, and whom we know was killed by Pharaoh Necho of Egypt in the year 609 BCE in our chronology. We've arrived at Josiah in our study of Second Chronicles. Ezra wrote the books of Chronicles, as far as we're aware. So when we read Ezra and Nehemiah and Esther, Esther's a bit different. It's an interesting book. But Ezra and Nehemiah are sort of, won't be too much different from the feel of reading Chronicles. Zechariah chapter 1. In the eighth month, in the second year of Darius, the word of Jehovah occurred to Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet, saying, Jehovah grew indignant at your fathers, very much so. And you must say to them, this is what Jehovah of armies has said. Return to me is the utterance of Jehovah of armies, and I shall return to you. Yahweh of armies has said. Verse 4, do not become like your fathers, to whom the former prophets called, saying, this is what Yahweh of armies has said, return, please, from your bad ways and from your bad dealings. But they did not listen, and they paid no attention to me, is the utterance of Yahweh. As for your fathers, where are they? And as for the prophets, was it to time indefinite that they continued to live? However, as regards my words and my regulations that I commanded my servants, the prophets, did they not catch up with your fathers? Right. So, yeah. What's he saying there? As regards my words and my regulations that I commanded my servants, the prophets, did they not catch up with your fathers? Right. Well, the former prophets died, like everybody has been doing, right? Up until even now. However, the words of the prophets caught up with the forefathers of the Israelites, so they returned and said, according to what Jehovah of armies had in mind to do to us, according to our ways and according to our dealings, that is how he's done with us. So the words of Jehovah caught up with them, according to that. Verse 7, on the 24th day of the 11th month, that is the month Shebat, that's like January in our calendar, in the second year of Darius, the word of Jehovah occurred to Zechariah, just like Haggai prophesied in the second year of Darius too, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet, saying, I saw in the night, and look, a man riding on a red horse, and he was standing still among the myrtle trees that were in the deep place. And behind him there were horses, red, bright red, and white. And so I said, who are these, my lord? At that the angel who was speaking with me said to me, I myself shall show you these, who these very ones are. Then the man who was standing still among the myrtle trees answered and said, these are the ones whom Yahweh has sent forth to walk about in the earth. And they proceeded to answer the angel of Jehovah who was standing among the myrtle trees and to say, we have walked about in the earth, and look, the whole earth is sitting still and having no disturbance. So the angel of Jehovah answered and said, O Jehovah of armies, how long will you yourself not show mercy to Jerusalem and to the cities of Judah, whom you have denounced these 70 years. So, that's interesting, because this is about the year 521 BCE. And if 70 years had already elapsed, then it's at least 591, if not earlier. But, of course, it could be saying that these 70 years have still been going even past the 70 years is possible. It's saying that as well. So it could be the 70 years referred to that began in 608 BCE, which is the beginning of the times of the Gentiles and the beginning of Israel and Judah's slavery to the nations, right? Which was prophesied by Jeremiah in Jeremiah 25 and 11. 70 years servitude to the nations in the Septuagint version. But it also could refer to... you've denounced these nations for 70 years. It could be prophetically referring to the year 517, when in the fifth or sixth year, rather, of Darius, it was in the Bible, it's called the sixth year. It could be referring to the sixth year of Darius when they do finish the temple, so that he denounced them until the final completion, which is yet to come, the 70 years that's being mentioned, possibly also is another interpretation of that. Because in 587, Jerusalem was destroyed, so 70 years later is the sixth year of Darius, 517. And Jehovah, verse 13, proceeded to answer the angel who was speaking with me with good words, comforting words. And the angel who was speaking with me went on to say to me, call out, saying, this is what Yahweh of armies has said. I have been jealous for Jerusalem and for Zion with great jealousy, with great indignation. I am feeling indignant against the nations that are at ease, because I, for my part, felt indignant to only a little extent, but they for their part helped toward calamity. Therefore, this is what Jehovah has said. I shall certainly return to Jerusalem with mercies, My own house will be built in her, is the utterance of Jehovah of armies, and a measuring line itself will be stretched out over Jerusalem. Call out further, saying, this is what Jehovah of armies has said. My cities will yet overflow with goodness, and Jehovah will yet certainly feel regrets over Zion, and yet actually choose Jerusalem. And I proceeded to raise my eyes and see, and look, there were four horns. So I said to the angel who was speaking with me, little children, what are these? In turn he said to me, these are the horns that dispersed Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. Furthermore, Jehovah showed me four craftsmen. At that I said, what are these coming to do? And he went on to say, these are the horns that dispersed Judah to such an extent that no one at all raised his head. And these others will come to set them trembling, to cast down the horns of the nations that are lifting up a horn against the land of Judah in order to disperse her. It's the end of Zechariah chapter 1. The horn, of course, is a symbol of power. The horn of a bull, for example. The horn of animals, right? It's a symbol of power, their power. You see, you know, these animals with horns like goats and things that fight each other by bashing, ramming horns together. Maybe that's why they're called rams, the males of the goats. But you know, they do use the horn, right, as a demonstration of power. So the horn is a symbol of power. And these horns that were described here, four horns, were described as having dispersed Judah, so they would have been certainly in possession of some power of some kind. And that's the end of the study for today. It's 1 minute we have extra. Maybe we can go back to our reading of this chapter here. It's so fascinating because if we look at this, the Rhine Papyrus, the front side of which is a copy of the much earlier mathematical document written in the time of the Pharaoh Amenemhat III, and we're either the writer of the other side or the writer of the one side, were either of them proved Jewish, it proves Amenemhat was Jewish. So if Moses wrote on one side of it, it proves that Amenemhat, who wrote on the other side, was also Jewish. There's a strong tendency to call that a form of proof. Now the word, quote, amen, unquote, means in Hebrew truly, but it means mother of an abyss because the M stands for mother in Hebrew, right? And the abyss is the word N in Egyptian too. So we've already talked about these letters M and N. The mother of an abyss. That's what the word amen means. But we're going to come back again tomorrow. That's the end of our study and our video for today. It's April 11th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 19:06 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is... Who is this? Liv Dusty. And this is Cassie saying bye for now.